Hi, welcome to this week's episode of Energy in Action. I'm Stephanie, the patient advocate for MitoAction. This week we have a hope-inspiring conversation with Lori and Carla from Zogenix. Zogenix is a pharmaceutical company that is dedicated to serving the rare disease community. Before we jump into our conversation, let me tell you a little bit more about Lori and Carla. Lori Bailey is the Senior Manager for Medical Affairs, and Carla Schad is the Director of Medical Affairs, and together they work towards finding resources and resolutions for patients with rare disease.
Thank you so much, Stephanie. We're so excited to be here. I wear a few different hats within Zogenix. The one, of course, I wear most proudly is the one where I work in patient advocacy. What I do is I work with communities, I work with patient organizations to support them to understand what the challenges are that families face. We really enjoy spending time with the community and we look forward to getting to know you. We also look forward for you getting to know us a little bit.
Very excited to know more about you. Carla?
Hey, I'm Carla Schad. As you said, I'm a senior director with medical affairs. My primary role is that I lead the field medical team or the medical science liaisons for the United States. I'm a child neurologist, actually, by training. Back whenever I was seeing patients, I focused a lot on stroke and hypoxic ischemic encephalopathy, but dealt with pretty much all patient types, including the neuromuscular kids. I really, truly try to help the company not only with managing a team, but also recognizing some of the unmet medical needs that we need to focus on as a company, both for strategy as well as helping patients and their families. And I've always had a mantra that if you keep the patient first, you will never go wrong in business. And that has sort of always been my philosophy since I've worked for the pharmaceutical industry.
Wow. As a parent of a child with a neuromuscular disease, I am so thankful for the two of you and definitely to hear that there are physicians out there who really do keep the patient as an individual and look at what their needs are before just putting out those blanket suggestions or therapies. So thank you for having that mindset. So tell me more about what the two of you are up to with Zogenix and how Zogenix is intertwined with our rare disease community.
Well, Carla,
we do a lot of intertwining, don't we, Lori?
We do a lot of intertwining. We affectionately refer to ourselves as Mutt and Jeff. We have such great camaraderie between the two of us and just work so well together. Carla and I will meet with different people from the community, whether it's over a cup of coffee during a conference or at a meeting. A local family maybe has organized a community walk to raise awareness or raise funds, or maybe it's presenting some data on research that we've done. We really try to stay engaged and get out together in the community as much as we can. It's a lot of listening.
Yeah, I think, Lori, to that point is that, you know, Lori is, you know,
here we go.
the greatest, what I would call an empath, that she truly really feels a lot of the communities that we work with, and that is based on our relationships. But our relationship with the communities that we've worked with is very simply of just trying to be there and to support in any way. You know, it's not about, you know, a grandiose plan. Sometimes it comes down to the simplest things. And there's been times that we've been at advocacy events and epilepsy in particular, and it comes down to the simplest things, that we're available and that we're able to be there. There's been days that the only thing that we've really done is been moving tables or supporting a refreshment stand. There was more than one conference where I ended up holding both the sibling children, the smaller ones, or even some of the affected children, to give the families an opportunity to engage with one of their meetings. It's just being there and just being available and with no agenda. That's what I think is what makes Lori and our partnership the most excellent.
Wow, yeah. I like that. So tell me more about the work that Zogenix is doing within the pharmaceutical world and in the rare disease community. What inspires them to keep looking in all of these dark corners and under the beds and finding our small advocacy groups like MitoAction? The rare disease world, if we put all of us rare disease patients together, is quite a large community, but we are all fractured off into our own separate boxes because we all do have our own needs as well as the global need of being rare and being recognized. How do you pick which diseases to investigate and to be part of and to try and see if you can make a difference?
You know, with that, I think that the thing that is so impressive about Zogenics and quite frankly, the main reason I'm here is that, you know, I know whenever I interviewed with this company and I was with the chief medical officer as well as the global vice president. And whenever I said what I said about always keeping the patient first, you will never go wrong. And they just grinned from ear to ear. And what I've noticed, you know, Zogenics is an overall very small company. I think we've made 200 people this year worldwide. And we have this global commitment to the rare disease space in order to bring innovative therapies for those that, you know, that are in the most need. And obviously, you know, it's by opportunities that we get new things that come our way, but there is this striking commitment towards rare disease and rare pediatric disease. And so at this moment in time, you know, it's with the neuromuscular space that we're the most new with. But if you look at what we've been dealing with for the last 7 years, is primarily very rare epilepsy condition in pediatric patients. It's about trying to help as many patients as we can that we possibly can that are in the rare space.
Yep. Wow.
Some of the work that we've done in the community, it's not just about the therapies. It really is about the family, the whole disease, and the impact on everyone. I remember one meeting several years ago. Carla and I were having a discussion with one of the folks from the patient org. You know, like Carla said, it's just the little things. It was a small comment that was made in our discussion, and kind of these light bulbs went off in our heads. And we just started right on the fly brainstorming, collaborating, and we didn't know it at the time, but this was the start of the sibling project. When we realized that there was this unmet need within the DEE community where, you know, the siblings were really being impacted, but maybe there just wasn't awareness or support for the siblings. We first collaborated and discussed it with the community. And that, I mean, that's where the idea came from. And when we brought that idea to the medical team and said, hey, this is something we think is important, they were very supportive. Just those initial sparks turned into a couple years worth of research into the impact on siblings, a number of posters, a full manuscript, and resources that were created to support both parents and caregivers and the siblings. And it all came from that little spark. Zogenics recognizes it's the whole family.
If you look at some of the clinical data that we have comes out, you know, you always look at, you know, the benefit of the drug or the efficacy or, you know, the safety and tolerability. But, you know, we also have longstanding have been looking at the quality of the life of not only the patient, but, you know, looking in toward the caregiver. And so, you know, even before, you know, the Mutt and Jeff show started, there's been, you know, an emphasis about, you know, it's a holistic approach, for lack of a better word. But, you know, whenever you have an affected patient, it's not just the patient. There's a dynamic, especially in pediatric rare disease. And our company has done a really, really good job at that and identifying that from the get-go. And we just came in, you know, it's one of those things that just by listening and talking, we were able to leverage an unmet need that really hadn't been touched too much upon. And it was very fascinating to whenever Lori and I initiated the sibling project, because it was funny that I sort of talked about stories that I used to do when I would see patients, because we would have kids that would travel 6 and 7 hours to our tertiary center to be seen. Really, it was a long journey, which typically involved the entire family coming. And, you know, that would include all the siblings would be in tow. And it was just, you know, those collective experiences recognize the unmet need. And I do believe that when Lori and I started to do the due diligence of, you know, looking at literature reviews and truly identifying what the unmet need was, we realized that there had never, ever been a study where somebody actually asked the sibling themselves a question. It was always directed through the parent as the responder. And this was something that, you know, just because we heard an advocate say something, and we just, the funniest thing at that meeting, I believe it was in Houston, Lori and I just looked at one another, and it was just like our eyes popped out of our heads because, oh my God, this is a huge opportunity to help not just the patient, but the entire family.
Tell me more about what the sibling project was and what you've gleaned from it, what you've learned. I know as a mother of three with one affected child that you're right. You are completely right. When there's a child that's ill, the whole family goes down. I know there's a lot of jokes out there about if mom is sick, the whole family goes down. But that one child just takes over the life and the air and the oxygen in the house, especially when they're ill or when their needs are peaking for some reason or another. And you're right. Nobody really sat down and spoke with my son's older siblings about, you know, was this like, how is this to you? What are your fears? What are your thoughts? And now as they're all in adulthood, more questions are being asked. And I am hearing as a mom, why didn't anybody ever ask us about this before? Sometimes through their eyes and their perception of what their sibling is like is completely different than mom/caregiver/nurse/teacher. They see things with a completely different lens, and it's valuable information. What have you collected and learned and figured out through your sibling study? This is fascinating to me.
As Carla mentioned, researching the unmet need, we realize we just don't have the information that we need because we've never heard from the siblings themselves. So decided that we really need to do a research survey. We worked with professionals. We worked with a psychologist. We worked with a couple of the different communities, recruited a number of families, worked with siblings as young as age 9 to help us actually develop this research survey. What we found was a little bit hard, I think, for parents to hear. Kids reported pretty high levels of anxiety, mood symptoms, and depressed mood symptoms. In the research that we did, we had a few different versions of the survey, one for the 9 to 12-year-olds, 13 to 17, 18 and older, all siblings, and then we also asked the parents to contribute. One of the things that was interesting was that the parents reported observing lower levels of potential anxiety, stress, or sadness than the siblings actually reported.
Wow.
The thing too, I think the greatest thing that came of this project that over the years, Lori and I have been in multiple, you know, face-to-face sibling sessions, and, you know, I would sort of make it similar in your mindset of it being like a support group where, you know, we gather the kids in a circle and just talk to them and ask questions. And, you know, they have others in the group there that, you know, are the age groups can range. There's been a couple of times that we've, you know, had some 3 and 4 years olds in the room too, but what was really profound about that is that they really were insightful as well. But the thing that just was overwhelming to me with these kids, even though, you know, no matter, you know, you would find some of these things that you would, you know, probably would see with any other child, but, you know, issues where, you know, hey, you know, you've got a kid going to prom and suddenly prom's been taken out of the picture because, you know, the siblings were really sick and they were taken to the hospital, or ball games or school plays, this, that, and the other. And you have all of these things coming up, but the overwhelming thing that will just absolutely just almost bring you to tears is all of these children, for the vast majority, were like, yeah, you know, it is what it is. You know, my sibling comes first, and, you know, I'll do anything I can for them. And the sacrifices, an absolute, you know, unbelievable ability to you know, be so unselfish was just overwhelming. And obviously, you know, there were, you know, don't, you know, get this wrong. There was absolutely, you know, wasn't ever a perfect situation. And I, what was the little girl's response? It's not always unicorns pooping rainbows. That was her response to us. But but it was, you know, these kids, the overwhelming thing was how dedicated they were to their siblings and in conversation to them, and how proud they were. And we would come out of these sessions into the larger sessions, and Lori and I would be physically taken by our hands or our clothing to take us over to introduce us to the affected sibling and to the family. Wow. And the pride that they would have whenever they would talk about the affected sibling. And, you know, and but to the other side, with what we found, you know, some indicators of suggestion of, you know, psychosocial emotional impact, you know, these kids would start to open up. And, you know, and then the thing, too, that really just showed who these kids were was their motivation to help other kids. Mm-hmm. You know, hey, I've been through this. What can we do to help the next kiddo coming along? And you know, it to me has been, you know, hey, I'm a medical doctor, but probably for me working with this company, this has probably been the most impactful thing that I do. And like, you know, we were talking is that, you know, in the fall, typically whenever you're able to travel, both Lori and I, we do the Mutt and Jeff Roadshow, which we're essentially gone every weekend between September and November. And, you know, I have to say, I get a little bit tired of Mutt sometimes, but,
wait a minute. I thought you were Mutt and I was Jeff.
No, you're Mutt. But anyway, but the point being is that this is so emotional for us and the investment that we have, that we love these children, both the, you know, the affected sibling as well as, you know, the other siblings that we've been working with. This has been such an unbelievable experience and opportunity for us. And we're, to be honest, I'm very, very proud of this, of what we've been able to glean over the last several years.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Have you taken any of this information that you've gathered and made formal recommendations or come back to professionals who are working with the affected children and saying, here's some information that might holistically help this family out or this individual out?
We have put quite a bit of information out there, first of all, into the scientific community by getting out these results of the research through different abstracts and posters that have been presented, and as well a full publication that's out to try to help clinicians better understand the entire impact. And then as well, we've created resources for parents and caregivers as well as siblings to help them cope.
Wow.
We've also have done a number of presentations at scientific or medical meetings around the world. And I know personally that the one that was most impactful is that I presented the data, and there was a particular physician there that's actually is a neuromuscular physician by training. And I gave the results, and she came up to me after the presentation, and she looked at me and she goes, Carla, she goes, I'm so sorry. She goes, we sort of get wrapped up in the day, and we do have these siblings coming in tow to these clinical visits. And, you know, I promise you, I will do everything I can that to engage and interact with those siblings, just simply to pat them on the head and say, how are you doing? And, you know, that right there for, you know, this physician to come up to me in tears and be remiss and saying, I'm sorry. And to me, that was one of the most greatest personal impacts on the professional side I've seen as a result of the data.
Wow. That's encouraging to hear that physicians are even receptive to those aha moments of these children are in the room. They are hearing the word. They are part of this conversation, whether they're speaking or not. They are part of the conversation. And just as a sibling to be recognized in the room, and like you said, pat it on the head. Hey, how are you? Because so often these kids do feel invisible, regardless of their age. And sometimes they make themselves invisible, in our case, so that way all of the energy could go towards their brother. It was like, if we don't make any waves, there's more energy going that way. Mm-hmm. And that's not a healthy way to live either. So we needed to really work on that balance in our family. My quote, and I'll probably get lambasted on some mom group, but I was always fair is not equal. You know, fair is what's right for the situation. You know, just because you have a green sucker doesn't mean you get a green sucker. You know, fair is what's right for each situation. And
exactly.
That was kind of how we lived. And it would take, sometimes it's just easier to be fair, right? In the essence of equitability. And sometimes you just have to really look at it and say, this is how we're going to do today. So what's next on the horizon for the Mutt and Jeff Show post-pandemic?
First of all, we're really excited now to be working in this community. We're here to learn, to listen, and we don't know what's on the horizon. By spending time in the community and really getting to understand the challenges, we will discover together what's next. It won't be up to us. It will be up to the families.
We don't know what we don't know. This is new and brand new to us, and it's up to you to guide our path. And that's why you're going to hopefully see us listening, actively listening.
Mm-hmm.
Hopefully, you know, and this will be something that we'll work with your community to know what is right.
Mm-hmm. That is great to hear, because we have definitely felt muted for a long time. So many, and I'm sure you hear this from many rare disease groups, so many of our patients feel either disregarded, unheard, or trivialized. And what they really want to be is legitimized. And mm-hmm. what I'm feeling, what I'm going through is real. This is real. Mm-hmm. And from, you know, experiencing it as a mother with a young child to now experience it as a mother of a young adult, things are different. And I can say for myself now what I'm going through, and he can voice what he's going through. And mm-hmm. it's so empowering to be able to me, for me to sit back and see him advocate for himself now and say, mm-hmm. I need these tools. I need this medication. This is how I feel. How can you help me? I want better. And I always say, mm-hmm. you know, I hate to be patronized, and somebody will say, well, that's better. And I'm like, we deserve better than better. Better is mediocre. So if you can't do better, then we're going to go somewhere else. it's kind of my philosophy is I deserve better than better.
Well, and you know, if you think about how medicine in general has changed over the years, back in the 50s and 60s, there was a relationship where the physician, you know, knew everything and you had to listen, mm-hmm. you know, it was strong paternalism, and that model of treating patients is going away. Some people still have it, but it's all about the collaboration with the patient. And same thing happens with, you know, pharma, is that collaboration, we can't be paternalistic and tell you guys what you need. We have to be available to your needs and to adapt to those.
Oh, that is so refreshing to hear, because you are right. I'm like you ladies, I'm in that sandwich generation. I'm caring for my parents and I'm caring for my own kids. And my mom has literally said to me in the last 72 hours, if my doctor wanted me to know, he would tell me.
Mm-hmm.
No, you need to ask. It's okay to ask questions. It's okay mm-hmm. to come in with your own frame of mind of what you think should be happening, or no, you just, my role is to just do as I'm told. And I'm like, oh, poke me in the eye with a sharp fork. Please, mom, don't be so passive in your appointments. Please go in there and be an advocate for yourself. It's okay to go out on Google and do your research and go out on your, you know, on social media and find your resource groups and ask the questions of what did you do? What did you see? Where do I go? Because that is one of the true mm-hmm. gifts of the internet, is giving access of information to everybody. Mm-hmm. Not to say that everything on there is right, but hopefully you use and grow your brain and figure out what's right for you, and at least formulate questions to be an active mm-hmm. participant in your care. Mm-hmm. So that's what I always work with patients as an advocate, is you have a right to say, and you have a right to think what you want and mm-hmm. to know what you mm-hmm. need to know. And it's up to you to bring your piece of information to the table as well. It's I always equate it to like the potluck, you know, everybody has to bring something and then go from there.
Medical care should be a partnership on all parties.
Definitely. Mm-hmm. Definitely. I am so thankful. I'm going to please say that again, because I have so many patients who don't believe me on that.
It should be a partnership.
It should be a partnership. Yes, it should. Okay. Mm-hmm. Well, now we're going to come to the fun part of our podcast, and I call this rapid fire. I'm just going to ask you some quick questions. They're fun and simple. I tried not to get it into the holiday mode, but right now I'm really looking forward to making some Christmas cookies and going about the favorite food groups of an elf. And that's what, candy syrup, cotton candy, candy corn, or something like that. But you get where I'm going. So quick questions. What was the last show you binged watched and really enjoyed?
Well, all right, Lori.
I'm watching The Crown right now. That's what I'm watching right now.
What season are you on?
I'm still on the first season. You would never would have guessed this. The show that I just finished, it's a science fiction show, which is very unlike me, but called The 100.
Ooh. And so far, so good?
I can't tell you. It's very exciting. And I don't want to spoil it for you.
Excellent. Mm-hmm. Carla, what are you watching or have watched? And
well, enjoyed? the one I just finished was Ratched. Just very simple. It was dark but funny, and it, you know, comes over, you know, backstory of the one flew over the cuckoo's nest and has a little bit of medical content. And to me, I know this sounds sort of odd, but the cinematography and the color schemes that they used and the symbolism, it was just a very intricate show to watch.
Ooh, it sounds very multi-layered. I like that. Yeah. Okay, so if you had to pick your favorite movie to bring to the desert island, what would it be? Mine is On Golden Pond.
Aww.
I don't know why. If it's the loons, I don't know, but I love it.
I really love the loons, typically. Mm-hmm. But Lori, mine, you're going to laugh because, you know, I've got a lot of Southern influence, but especially, you know, trained in the South and all of that. Mine's The Help. I love that.
I love
those
movies too.
That I can watch over and over and over again.
Same. I could watch that movie over and over. So amazing.
Yeah,
I would have to concur.
Okay. What is a concert or live performance that you went to that you will never forget?
You're going to laugh at me, but my son, when he was in middle school, I incentivized him to get good grades. And so I promised I would take him to his first concert. So he worked really hard and, you know, had really good grades. And so he was so excited that he was going to get to go to his first concert. And I said, well, you pick, you know, whatever you want. And he told me that he wanted to go to the Family Values Tour. Well, I didn't know it. I thought, oh, that sounds really good and wholesome. I wasn't sure what that was. But I did end up taking him as I promised. And we spent 9 hours at this event. And, you know, all kinds of crazy things happened. He had his poster stolen. It was just this really chaotic day. But on the way home at like 1 o'clock in the morning, he looked over at me and he said, Mama, this is the best day of my life.
Oh, well, that's so awesome.
That's why. Yeah.
I love that.
Aww. Mm-hmm.
Okay. What is your favorite meal?
Carla, this one's yours.
Oh, much to my family's chagrin with this. I'm just a country kid. My mama was Appalachian. It's either fried chicken and mashed potatoes and gravy or meatloaf. Same concept. There was an unbelievable Southern cook and I tried to replicate that. So that's one of those two. It's got to be something to that degree.
That either would make me incredibly happy. So yeah. Sounds delightful. Okay. What's on your nightstand or your bedside table?
Clock radio. Believe it or not, an old fashioned one. It's a little cube.
Mm-hmm.
I have a stereo, but I actually listen to the radio on that little tinny clock radio.
Oh, wow. Okay.
I know. Old school.
But that's what comforts you. So there you go. Carla?
Yeah, well, mine's different, Lori. It's earplugs because my husband snores. And very simple. I'm, you know,
this is getting a little too personal now. So,
well, you know, there's and well, the other side of it, too, is I'm like, do I say this or not? I have a Bible on my nightstand. Mm-hmm. That's, you know, earplugs and a Bible. So that's the two things I have on my nightstand.
Excellent. All right. And if I were to take a picture of you experiencing an ordinary moment that brought you joy, what would that be?
That's an interesting question. For me, it's probably just taking a walk around the neighborhood or the city where I live. It's just an ordinary thing, but I love so much living in the city. It just brings me a lot of joy.
Wow. I like that.
Quite simply, whenever, you know, I'll be in my office and I have a couple of dogs. I have a lab and a Shih Tzu, and pretty much the entire day, the Shih Tzu will be in my office chair and the lab will be at my feet. And then occasionally, you know, the house cat will be on my shoulders purring. Just simple things like that are joyful for me, type of thing.
That's wonderful.
See, now, Carla, I thought you were going to say dancing to 80s music.
Well, I love dancing to 80s music. Well, that's like the last concert that I was going to answer for me was that, which surprises everyone, because most often you will see me going to these meetings in cowboy boots and you know, that I would be going to a country concert, but I'm pretty diverse. 80s music to my last concert was Five Finger Death Punch. So, you know, so diversity is what I am about.
Wow. Okay, that is unexpected.
Yeah, you know,
Excellent.
We have layers like onions, you know, you just keep pulling back layers.
Well, yes. My last three concerts have been Five Finger Death Punch, if that was unexpected. So, whoa. Sort of a groupie. Yeah, see.
Wow, you are a groupie now.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Wow. Well, it's better than being with the fish, right?
Exactly.
All right. Well, that wraps up our conversation for today. I want to thank you two both for coming on and introducing our community to Zogenix. I look forward to seeing you at the roadshow, so to speak, when we're out and about again in the communities. Mm-hmm. And I know Kyra and I will be everywhere we can be as soon as we're allowed to break free and go back out and find our people, because that's my goal, is to keep finding our people and helping them understand that they aren't alone. And I think your work is doing that brilliantly, especially with your sibling project. I am going to be a Googling crazy person here in a few minutes and looking up more information about that, because my head, as you guys are talking about light bulb moments, my head was going off with, oh, I can think of four or five doctors where this information would be super helpful for them. Let me see if they have it, or if they don't, or if they know about it, because it definitely will be helpful. So thank you for letting me know about that out there.
Well, from my point of view, it's been an absolute pleasure speaking with you guys today.
Great. Thank you. Great.
Yep. Same. Thank you so much. We really look forward to getting to know the community. Thank you.
Thank you.